I'm Chris McAdoo, and this is Enjoyable Listen Time with Best Behavior, where we talk to people who make things and make things happen. And, with any luck, inspire you to do the same.
Well, it's either going to go well or it won't.
Okay.
All right, so this is Enjoyable Listen Time from Best Behavior. I am Chris McAdoo, and to my right, although you can't see him because this is on the internet and not on a videotape machine, is George Middlebrooks.
Hi.
There he is. He is producing and making the wheels turn, and right across from me is Alan Sims.
Well, hello there.
Ah, yes.
I'm happy to be here.
Alan Sims, as many people know from his blog, Inside of Knoxville, for several years, but what many people may not know is that he was actually a librarian for how many years?
Well, actually, I had a split career. I was a public school employee for 30 years, but I was a librarian for the second half of that, and the first half of that, I was a guidance counselor.
So, that's pretty cool. So, we're going to talk to Alan today about club rule, best behavior club rule number 4.
Expose yourself,
but not in that way.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't brush up on my rules beforehand.
Expose yourself.
Oh, okay.
But not
got
in
it,
that
got it.
Way.
Okay.
You know, it's a family program.
In a family sort of way.
Well, it's at least PG-13.
Okay.
You know. But best behavior, our club rule number 4, we're all about sort of all the cards on the table, open dialogue, and exposing yourself to creative inspiration, new ideas, and different points of view. And I've just always thought that it was a cool story, Alan, you know, sort of making that switch from lifelong employee to essentially writer, photographer, blogger, entrepreneur. These are a lot of ers.
I didn't mean to do it. Well, it was all an accident.
Let's talk a little bit about where did you come from?
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm originally from the Gulf Coast, from Mobile, Alabama, and my parents were not college educated until I was older. My mother went to nursing school when I was 10. My dad worked in a paper mill, so he worked in a factory, and he went to work there when I was born. He was working in the oil fields before that. Went to work there for stability for the family because his dad had been in the oil fields, and he had gone to, gosh, I think he tells the story, like 8 schools in 4th grade, something crazy like that. So he wanted stability, so he went to work for a factory. And it was that sweet spot where you could actually do that and work your way up, and you could make a good living. So, you know, he made a good living, but very working class. My mom got her nursing degree when I was probably 12 by the time she finished that. Dad went to college a little bit then, and so did mom, but there was a real working class ethic. I mean, you get a job. But they were that middle class, like 50s, 60s, 70s thing where your kid goes to college. Kid's going to do better than you did, you know, kind of thing. So they were clear that I was going to college, but also clear that you pack your lunch pail, as you and I have talked about before. You pack your lunch pail and you go to work. And then the man sends you a check on the 30th of the month. And that's the way life works. And so that was very much the model. I was already kind of going wrong a little bit by the time I was a teenager because I was into music. You know, and
that's where
it starts, you know. And if I had been talented, my life would have probably been ruined. Thank God I wasn't talented. I quickly got off of that because I realized I didn't have the ability to make it in that kind of thing, but continued to write and be creative. So I had a creative thread through my life, but, you know, found myself at age 25 with a child and married and looking for a job where I could pack the lunch pail and go into work. So I started working in public schools. So fell right into that model of, you know, you work for a paycheck.
So when, I guess, where did you teach? Knox? Did you start out in Knoxville? Or
I did a couple of years. I did 1 year in Knox County, 1 year in Sevier County. But most of my career was in Oak Ridge schools. I was at Jefferson Middle School for... Actually worked 29 years and had a year of sick leave that I didn't use, so I was able to cash that in for my 30th year. 27 of my 29 years were at Jefferson Middle School in Oak Ridge all the way through.
Wow.
Yeah, and that, which is kind of a throwback, too, because, you know, the generation before us, before me, because I'm older than you are, That was you worked at the factory or whatever company you went to work for. The idea was, well, this is my job. This is what I'm going to do, and you went through that. And so I had that mindset, and I don't know. I think sometimes I'm maybe one of the last generation, you know, that gets to do that in America because our economy doesn't work that way anymore.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because you kind of joked, you know, when we first started talking, like, oh, I didn't mean to do that, but...
I didn't. I think most of what's happened in my life is an accident.
Yeah?
In a way. I mean, you know, we all, you work hard, you make the best decisions you can make, but then there's just a lot of stuff that happens, and that dictates, you know...
Well, when did you start...
A huge percentage of what
when
happens.
When did you start writing again?
Well, I never stopped.
Okay.
Stopped. So I was going to be the next Bob Dylan, and the unfortunate thing that happened there was the old Bob Dylan never stopped being Bob Dylan.
Bob Dylan.
So that position never came open. I got to college and realized I didn't have really the musical talent to take that anywhere. So I started writing poetry because I was already writing lyrics. So I thought, well, you know, I've already been doing it. I'll just do it a little differently. And I did that for years. By the time I was in my mid-30s, I kind of had a crisis. 40 didn't bother me. 30 didn't bother me so much. 35, because 35, I was like, the day after I was 35, I was closer to 40 than to 30.
Oh, yeah.
And it was sort of like this moment, and I realized I've said my whole life I'm going to be a writer. Well, I better start doing something about that. You know, I was still writing poetry, but I thought I haven't really made any headway with that. I need to explore some other kinds of writing. I need to get with the program. I debated about going back to school at that point and getting a PhD in English literature, just to teach literature, just because I loved writing so much. And that didn't seem like a viable option. So instead, I wrote a novel. And I just thought, well, I'll write a novel. So I got up at 4 o'clock every morning, and I did that for a year. And I would write for an hour and a half, and then I would shower and go to work, and then I would get up before the next morning, and I would write for an hour and a half, and I would shower and go to work. And so at the end of the year, I had a really, really terrible novel. It was awful. It was so bad. And incredibly, some agents really expressed interest, but I never really got off the ground with that. So once that kind of simmered, and I thought, okay, well, you know, I really had never really read many novels, and here I am thinking I can write one, so that's probably not a good direction to go. I started reading a lot more, and I started writing short stories, took a class, and I think I actually got pretty good at that over the years. I published one, but that was it. That was the end of the success. And so it wasn't until later that I discovered the kind of writing that would really, you know, happen for me, but I didn't mean to. I really didn't mean to. I just, you know, I have a compulsion to write. I think people who do any kind of creative endeavor have a compulsion to do that thing, and it can pay or it cannot pay, but the compulsion doesn't go away.
Oh, I absolutely agree. To any of us out there that have that compulsion, if it is art making, if it is writing, if it is music, I mean, you know, if I don't go in the studio, if I don't create, if I don't make things, eventually my wife asked me to just go outside.
Right, right.
Just like...
Outside is pretty generous. My wife would probably suggest a longer hike, but yeah. It's something that you just, it's hard to describe to somebody who doesn't have that thing, that drive that's in there.
Well, and I think you're speaking to something I think really, really, really important, because, you know, you wrote a bad novel.
Very bad. It was awful.
But the important thing there is not that you wrote a bad novel or that you wrote a good novel. The important thing is that you made that happen. And the detail there about basically creating an extra hour and a half every day,
mm-hmm,
by waking up early.
Right.
Right. So I think setting that goal of I want to do this, if it is a success in the public's eyes or someone else's eyes, that may be a secondary goal. But the fact that you're able to say, this is a thing I'm going to accomplish, and I'm going to make it happen in these ways.
Right.
And I think that's a thing that gets overlooked. If you want to accomplish things creatively, write, art, music, whatever, literally creating that time.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do before the kids get up or after they go to bed?
Right.
Are you sitting there watching TV or are you writing? Are you working on your craft?
Right. I have a lot of people who say, I don't know how you have time to do what you do.
Yeah.
How do you have that time? And then I see their next Facebook post is about the television show they've been watching and the series, you know, the Amazon series. There, you know, I just think, well,
there's your time.
There's your time. You're just choosing to do something different, and that's cool. I mean, if people want to choose to just, you know, kind of fritter away some hours that make up a dull day or whatever, if people want to just, you know, have fun, and there's nothing wrong with that. But if you really want to accomplish something, there's a trade-off. You've got to decide this is. I'm not going to sleep that hour and a half, or I'm not going to watch that television show anymore.
There, to really accomplish something, to deliberately focus on it. I think there is this sort of romantic notion, right, of the artist as the creator, or the artist, the creator, or whatever, as this sort of tortured genius.
Right.
Oh, the inspiration, or whatever.
Right.
But really, behind every successful artist, writer, music, anybody that I have ever met, business person, that I have ever met, there is no excuse and there is no shortcut around hard work and focus.
And you don't always feel inspiration. And some kinds of writing, I do think, require more inspiration. Songwriting is one that and poetry. Those, to me, I don't know how you just sit down and make that happen. But if you don't sit down with your guitar, if you don't sit down with your pen and paper or your computer or whatever you're writing on, well, it's not going to happen.
Exactly.
It's not. So,
well, let's talk about kind of turning that compulsion into what we now know as insideofknoxville.com.
Right, insideofknoxville.com.
When did you start, or what gave you the idea, the impetus to say, I'm not just going to write, you know, for myself, just as a personal sort of endeavor, but I'm going to put it out there every day, every week, you know, however. When was that, and what was the kind of the reasoning behind that?
It was a chain of events, but I mean, make no mistake, I always wanted to be rich and famous from writing. I mean, you know, I wanted to be a world-renowned writer. I wanted, you know, it's like, God, Shakespeare, Hemingway, Sims, you know.
Yeah.
You just rattled those names off.
The Mount Rushmore.
Yeah, I wanted to be the Mount Rushmore. But, you know, so I always wanted that. And I didn't realize how badly I wanted an audience until I finally got one, however. And the way that happened, it was a series of events. I've always loved cities. Always loved visiting city. I fell in love with New Orleans as a kid. Didn't really fall in love with my own city until I was older. I guess that's not that rare. But I fell in love with New Orleans, and then we went to New York City, and I fell in love with that, and D.C., and went to Montreal. And then, of course, over the years, my wife and I have traveled more to Europe and so forth. And I just love cities. And in Knoxville, we've lived here since 82 in Knox County, all around the city, south and west and so forth. And we would always come downtown. I loved just kind of walking around down here, even when it was more or less empty. And, of course, I loved coming to shows and so forth when there would be music and that kind of thing. So we came down here a lot. By 2009, my wife and I were coming down here every opportunity we had. Want to go out to eat? Yeah. Where do you want to go downtown? You know, it wasn't like, where do you want to go? It was like, where do you want to go downtown? And so we were coming down here more and more. We felt like downtown had just, like, it was done. It was 2009. It's ready. It's ready, you know?
Yes.
And we were on one of those walks one day and saw this spot, and my wife said, I could live there. Call them. And I said, okay. It was like, it was Labor Day. And I said, well, I'll call when they open tomorrow. And she said, no, call now and leave a message. And so within 8 weeks, we had moved. Well, during that 8 weeks,
wow,
I had kind of panicked. It's like, we've always talked about living in a city, but we've never done it before. What is it like? You know, is it scary? Is, you know, our car going to be destroyed every night in the parking garage? Are we going to get raped and pillaged as we walk around from place to place? What's it like to live in the city? So I got online and I thought, okay, somebody's writing this somehow, somewhere. And I found very little. I found Shot of Urban, Michael Haynes' column in Metropulse. And that was about it. And that was once a month. So it wasn't like about daily life. So we took the plunge anyway. We moved, and I was actually having chocolate cake and red wine with a writer friend of mine, 1 o'clock in the morning one night. And she said, well, you ought to write that. I said, what are you talking about? Write it where? Write it on the wall? I don't know. What do you mean, even? She said, a blog. And I said, what's that? I mean, really, I was that out of it.
Wow.
I kind of knew what a blog was, but I didn't know how you would ever, like, where you would get permission from the blog gods to do one, or, you know.
To hand you down a blog.
Right. Where did you get the certificate to allow you to start?
And I figure if you can get an internet certificate to do weddings,
yeah,
you'd probably do them for blogs,
probably
too.
Probably could, too, yeah. I should probably give those out now. At any rate, that was her suggestion, so that's how it started.
And this was in 09?
It was in 10 by then. Okay, then okay. It was 10. It was a few months later, and I started writing it. And I was still in my short story group. I was still trying to get published writing short stories and, you know, doing serious art. And I remember the night that I almost sheepishly said to my fellow short story writers, well, you know, I'm writing this blog now. And it's like, oh, a blog. Yes, I am. And I confessed to them that it was just, I had to choose. I could write short stories, continue writing short stories, or I could write a blog. And I actually had readers with the blog. I had, you know, like maybe 20 a day or something. It was incredible. 20
it's an
people.
Audience that is,
it's an
yeah.
audience. Like, they're waiting for my next story, all 20 of them. And I had just started and gotten readers, and even though it was small numbers by my current standards, it was a lot then. I'd never had readers. When you've always had zero readers.
And now you have 20 a
20
day.
Is a lot. That's right.
How often were you writing back then? Or publishing, I guess.
Yeah, that. Publishing. I was pretty close to every day early
wow.
on.
Yeah.
I mean, early on I started that. Now, they weren't as meaty probably as what I'm writing now, because I was working full time still, you know, still had family going and, you know, all the things, and I was commuting every day from Knoxville to Oak Ridge. So think about it. I'd get up at 6 o'clock and leave the parking garage and go to Oak Ridge, and I'd spend all day in Oak Ridge, and then I'd come back. So somewhere in the rest of the day that was left, I had to get my material and write about it. So it wasn't as weighty. Let's just say it was pretty lightweight at times.
But again, it was there.
It was there, and it was steady. And I found that early. I mean, I'm a statistics nerd, and so I watched my statistics, and I could tell. You work today, and you put something out there, you have X number of views. You don't work today, and you don't put anything out there, oh, it's X minus
you have
a
less.
Lot.
Yeah.
That's right. And so, you know, it was kind of an instant feedback of work, you know, telling me to work. And so I fell into it, and then I just couldn't stop, because I'm built that way. I'm just built that way.
Well, so you started out as, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you were sort of driven, that compulsion, you know, sort of drives you to create this thing, more of a personal, sort of more of a personal journey. When you started out and you got your blog certificate,
right?
From
when it came in the mail
from the Zeus of blogs.
That's right.
Did you ever imagine, or did it, you know, sort of like, did it make sense to you that this is a thing people that you could do for a living?
No, not at all. No, I never expected to make any money at all. And after about a year, I think I added Google Ads, and after 3 years. And at this point, I was getting about 20,000 page views a month. So mm-hmm. after 3 years, I'm getting 20,000 page views a month, which sounds nice. I was making about $1 a day from my Google Ads. It was big money.
Big money.
I didn't know what to do with it at the end of the month. It was just flowing in. It was like overcoming me.
I mean, that's a lot of dollars.
It's a dollar a day, every single day.
Every single day.
I mean, let's just point that out. A day goes by, a dollar comes in. It was most days. I mean, sometimes it was 89 cents. I'll be honest. But yeah, so there was certainly no idea I'm going to make money off this
right.
at all, let alone a living. That was not even remotely considered at the beginning. It was just really I was writing it for people like myself who were maybe going to consider moving to downtown Knoxville and got online like I did and said, well, what's it like? And so the effort was to answer that question. This is what it's like in downtown Knoxville.
It's really interesting. Like I kind of coming back to that again, using that compulsion in a positive manner. I always like to think about, you can either bitch or you can do. And you did. You said that there was, you know, well, where's all the information? Where is, what's going on this Tuesday? Why is this development happening? Or this is interesting, you know. And you didn't find any information about that. And so you just became the information.
Right, right. You know, then once I started doing it, the compulsion was to do it better.
Yeah.
And so that has driven a lot of my experience. So there's been a lot of things, again, this comes back to, I didn't mean to, you know. I thought, well, maybe some people will find this online. That was the height of my ambition, maybe some people out there, you know. And I didn't realize that I'd never taken photographs in my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I was a writer, you know what? And then I realized pretty quickly, oh, some people don't actually read. They just look at pictures. Ah, okay.
Ah.
So I should have pictures. And my intention originally was I'll do like a lot of bloggers do who don't really ever go much of anywhere. And that is they just borrow pictures around. But I'm also a librarian at this point. And, you know, the copyright thing, it was like, I can't do that. I can't just steal pictures. So I'd have to find, you know, public pictures. And it was just pretty quickly. I mean, within 2 weeks, I thought, I'm going to have to take my own photographs.
Yeah.
So I started doing that. And I had a point-and-shoot camera. And I laughed at people with the big lenses. It's like, those silly people, they could have a cheap camera. And they would have just as good a photographs quick as I do. And of course, you know, it's like any art or any craft, anything that you do very long, you know, at first you think, I'm pretty darn good at this. And then you can start seeing after a while, you know, the vision gets better. Like, oh yeah, that thing is way better than my thing.
Wait a second.
I'm missing something here. And yeah. So, you know, then I bought a nicer camera and I took a photography class, and then I bought another nicer camera and took another photography class. And you know, I'm still doing that kind of thing, still learning software and so forth. So the whole photographic journey was one that I didn't plan to take. But those two things happened, really, with the photographs. One was I realized how important they were and that mine weren't as good as other people's. The other thing was I started at some point, and I can't really even articulate when this was, realizing that I was writing a history of an era of the city.
Huh.
And I was writing it to a level of detail and systematically writing it to a level of detail that nobody else was doing. So that makes, then I started looking at historic photographs and thinking how important those photographs are.
The ephemera.
Yeah.
The evidence.
Right,
yeah.
The evidence of what was. And sometimes, you know, in those old photographs, it's not what the person was actually trying to shoot. It's what was just over their left shoulder that is important to historians, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's just the number of them, because you never know what else is in the picture that really becomes the important thing, you know? Uncle Joe, who you're taking a photograph of, you know, maybe important to your family.
And in the back on the hill, there's Lee Harvey Oswald.
Yeah, that's
like
right.
That.
There's the grassy knoll. I started feeling really an obligation to make these photographs as good as I could make them.
Yeah.
Whatever that is, and I still do not call myself a photographer at all, but I wanted to make them as good as I could make them.
Well, I think that speaks to, and again, you sort of taking an issue. Oh man, well, these don't look as good as other people's, or well, I can't really use these stock photos anymore. Mm-hmm. This just isn't going to work. And instead of listening to that voice in your head that says, I'm not a photographer. It's the same voice, I would venture to say, that's in a lot of people's heads that say, I'm not an artist. I'm not a business person. I'm not a runner. I'm not a fill in the blank.
Right. Well, and one that a lot of people are talking about right now. I'm not a politician. I can't run for city council. But now a lot of people are questioning that. They're saying, well, maybe I can, you know.
So the contribution that you can make, right? So if it is personal, if it is political, if it is philosophical, if it is artistic, that little gremlin that says, you can't do this because of this, this, and this. Mm-hmm. And being able to say, or to ask, like, well, really? Really? Like, why? Right. What is the reason behind me not being able to do this?
Right.
And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, sometimes there's the gatekeepers that want to protect what's inside the gate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but also I have found when opening yourself up sort of opening the vein, as it were, in terms of exposing yourself to new things, trying new things. There is in Knoxville and in other cities as well, but in Knoxville there's an incredibly creative or a supportive community here when people do want to do things.
Right.
So if you want to learn to do any number of things, there is a group, there is a support here, especially coming up now. Downtown, if you want to be an entrepreneur, if you want to, you know, stretch yourself, there are many, many ways, you know, to do that.
And I think there are a lot of people, and I don't know how unique this is to Knoxville. I suspect it's kind of unique. There are a lot of people who are ready to not only root for your success, but also to help you be successful. People want other people to succeed here.
Absolutely.
And I think that's a real quality of our city. So, you know, I didn't intend to be a photographer. I didn't expect that I would have a lot of readers. I didn't mean to make it into a living, but it just sort of all kind of kept happening. And as it would grow, I would say, well, I could do this, I could do that, and it just kind of continued. But I had many people who helped me along the way. That's the other thing. You know, I've worked hard. There's no question about that, I continue to work hard. But I also would not have been able to, you know, if I hadn't had that first drunken conversation with my writer friend, maybe, you know, enough time would have gone by that somebody else would have done something kind of like this. And I said, well, yeah, it's kind of
been taken care of.
Yeah, I don't need to do that. And so it was her encouragement early on and her showing me what a blog was, which was really helpful. So that was a turning point.
It all started with cake and wine.
Cake and wine. I mean, as many good things.
I was going to say, that seems like a good general starting point for
a lot of things.
Well, let's take, for somebody that did not want to start a blog and didn't want to become a photographer and didn't mean to make a living, how many readers do you have a month now?
It runs anywhere from 50 to 70,000 readers a month. Just depends. It's kind of hard to track some of that, but yeah, I run about 60, 70,000 page views a month.
Yeah. So, I mean, well over, you know, 500,000 people per year.
It was almost a million last year.
That's wild.
It was almost a million. And that's, of course, now the kind of guy I was like, oh, well, I've got to have a million. How do I get to a million?
Yes.
Because it's like, that's the next challenge.
Well, I think that's, you know, it's a really cool story. And there's a couple things I want to touch on is... One is I want to hear some of the most interesting things that you feel personally that you've learned from your experiences. You've had to have met a ton of people that you wouldn't have otherwise met.
Hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, no doubt.
What are some of the, I don't know, you know, what are some of the standout stories, the cool things that you have been a part of or chronicled over the last, you know, 7 years?
I guess I think in broader terms, a broad story that speaks to me as I go through is the number of millennials that I've met who are doing amazing things. I mean, there's so many parts of what I see that run counter to sort of the national narrative or the more common narrative. Well, millennials are lazy people who stay at home and they don't get jobs, blah, blah, blah. I see millennials out there busting their butts to survive, but also doing really creative things willing to work that extra job to also be able to do the art that they want to do or to do the creative thing. So that's one thread that's kind of come through a lot of the stories, I guess. I don't know, there are dozens of those kinds of stories. And a lot of times they wind up helping me. One of the people that I interviewed because he was starting a second business asked me why I didn't have ads. And I said, well, just because I don't know how much to charge. I'm not the,
what?
You know, I don't know. Yeah, I thought about it, but this was 2014, I guess. And he said, oh, it's easy. Here's the formula. That's what you do. And you just go and you tell them. And it was $200 an ad.
Uh-huh.
And I said, geez, I'm going to ask somebody for $200 to just put a little like square pixels on my webpage. And I did. I asked them and they said, yeah. That'll be good. We'll do that. We'll do that. And that's how I started making money. So there's a case of, you know, I'm interviewing this person, and they turn around and help me.
Sure.
And I've seen that play out over and over and over with all the people that I've worked with. And so, yeah, I've met hundreds of people. One of the huge personal changes for me and it hasn't changed the nature of who I am, but it's forced me outside my comfort zone. I'm not an extrovert. I'm totally an introvert. I'm a typical writer in that way. You know, if I could just stay in my home and write, I would probably do that. But I can't, because I've got to go interview people. I've got to go meet new people. I've got to introduce myself and say, hey. And early on, it was like, hey, do you know what a blog is? Okay, let me explain that. And then, okay, I've got one of those. So, yeah, it's a blogger. No, I don't write for the News Center. No, I don't write for Mercury. No, it's like,
yeah.
Well, they couldn't wrap their heads around, well, where's this going? You know, what if I talk to you, you're going to put it where? What?
Is it on the internet?
The interwebs?
Yeah. What?
And so, early on, I had that additional barrier. Now, you know, people do know the blog. So many times when I approach somebody, they already know what it is and what I'm doing. And so I've got some, I guess, bit of credibility built up. But early on, I had to really go up to people and be the extrovert. And it's so enriched my life. It's so enriched my life, because I wouldn't know these hundreds of people. I wouldn't know you. I mean, if I didn't do this blog, yeah, I would not know most of the people that I know.
Yeah, we met at, I guess the first time we met was actually in 2011 at the Pachacacha.
Yep, that was the first time.
Which, yeah, at PKN Knoxville, that's a great organization to check out. And have you presented?
I have, yeah.
Yeah, very cool. 20 slides, 20 seconds apiece, artists, creatives, and general troublemakers.
Right, right.
Having their say.
And so, yeah, I loved what you did that night. And now, you know, I'm blessed in that since people do know about me, I can go to Pachacacha and somebody's really cool and interesting. I can walk to them afterwards and say, hey, I'd like to do a story. And they say, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
That's
good.
That's good. And they're excited.
Now that you don't have to explain what the internet or the blog is.
They're not so suspicious anymore. They're just excited. So a lot of things have happened. So, but there are, it'd be hard to just come up off the cuff with individual stories.
Well,
but that's a thread.
The story arc there, I love that you're talking about young people doing things. Because it is way too easy to sort of be captured by that, like you said, that national narrative of all the young people.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care about anything but video games, or, you know, they're not working hard. And I think they've essentially been saying that since people have written things down.
I think since spoken word, maybe. Yeah. Socrates or whatever.
They'll find a cave drawing somewhere.
Right.
Like lazy teenager.
No doubt. No doubt about it. But you know, they're working hard and they're brave. They're just brave, man. They'll go out and they'll do something that's like probably not going to work. But they don't care. They're going to do that.
They're going to do it.
And sometimes it works. And if it doesn't, they go do another crazy thing.
Yeah.
Because they're just brave like that, you know, and it's counter to the idea of you pack your lunch pail and you go to work.
Well, that, as you sort of alluded to, you know, when we first started, I mean, that life is over.
I think it really is. I think there are some people my age who are still trying to coast to the end of their career, you know, not their life. I wasn't being morbid, but their careers, you know, kind of clinging to that idea. But really, I think it's done.
And so for a millennial, I kind of wonder, you know, I wonder sometimes if it's people view that late quote unquote laziness as just a different hustle. They know that they're not going to be at a place for 30 years.
Right.
So the skills that they are learning now may be obsolete in 10.
Absolutely. I mean, look at my story. I knew I wanted to be a writer when I was 12 years old.
Yeah.
The kind of writing I wound up having success at did not exist when I was 12 years old, or 22, or 32, or 42 years old. It didn't exist.
Wow.
And so there was no way to have imagined, really, realistically, what that would look like.
Like if somebody had said, 20 years ago, or even 15.
Right.
Hey, Alan, you think you'll blog?
Right.
You know, later and interview people?
Right.
And take photographs and do, you know, this history of Knoxville, you'd look at them like they were a crazy person.
No, I'm going to write a novel, or I'm going to, you know, write a second bad novel or whatever. Yeah, I wouldn't have been able to imagine it. So, you know, that's exciting for the current people who are entering the job market, and it's terrifying. I mean, it's both those things.
I just think it's just a different job market. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that I think for young people out there that are looking to do, you know, things, I think it's evident to them Mm-hmm. I think they know this.
Right.
So there's a lot of folks looking back mm-hmm. and seeing like, oh, why don't they buckle, you know, all these kind of buckle down and da-da-da-da-da.
Right.
And they are working hard, but in their own way.
Right.
And that's what I have seen. And it's really refreshing to hear somebody else say that. That, like, these kids are working hard.
They're working way harder than a lot of us had to. Because it was, how safe was it, man? You just, you go to your job and you figure, yeah, this company is the one I'm going to work for the next three decades.
Here's a job.
Here's a good job. I can move up to middle management and, you know, keep packing that land. It's just that
give
I was,
me a nice Mitsubishi Diamante.
Yeah. We were sold the idea that that was security in life.
That's the dream.
That's the dream. Is you have a good paycheck coming in, and it maybe has a chance to get a little better. You have 3 weeks off. You can take some time during the year, and that's life. And, you know, I don't think that we necessarily chose to blow it up, but it has blown up. And so now it's got to go at it a different way entirely.
Well, so now we've covered a lot of ground. And I really enjoy hearing about, again, young people are working hard. And I every time somebody tells me a story about people wanting other people to succeed, that is something that I think we can all take to heart in terms of the way that we live our lives. If you do, you know, work that regular job, if you have a paycheck, if you, you know, whatever you way you live your life, helping others to succeed does not make your life worse. It only makes it better.
Absolutely. And I think, I really believe this city is built that way. Everybody knows everybody in ways sometimes that we don't discuss out loud. We all know, and we know about each other. And by and large, people just help each other. Almost every interview I do now concludes with one or the other of us saying, well, do you know so-and-so? You should really get together with him. In fact, I think when you and I first sat down and talked, we had several of those kinds of exchanges. Like, well, you need to meet.
You don't know this guy? Oh, yeah.
I took you to meet somebody. I think it was maybe Rusty Odom or somebody. It was
I met Jonathan Sexton from the Knoxville Entrepreneur Center.
There you go.
And a super talented musician and all around. Yeah. A great guy for Knoxville to have.
Right. So, you know, I mean, that's just the way it works here. And I'm very proud of that fact. I think it says something really great about our city. But, you know, I do want to make clear, I have worked super hard, said that earlier, but there are so many steps along the way that if the right thing hadn't happened at the right time, I would not have done this. That writer friend, early on, I won some awards with Metropulse, and that gave me some credibility I could kind of take along. People were generous to me when they didn't really know what I was doing and allowed me to interview them. You know, I've only had like maybe three people ever on the street out of all the thousands I've photographed say, no, don't take my picture.
Huh.
I mean, that's always amazed me. It's like, you know, I walk up to people like with these gorgeous, cute little kids and say, can I take a picture of your children? Like, they ought to say no. Who are you, creepy old man? But instead, you know, they say, oh, how do you want to pose?
Yeah.
You know, and people, yeah, it's just people have been very, very supportive and helpful. If that one person hadn't at that moment said, well, I know how you do ads because that's my day job and got me started on that, then I wouldn't have had the income to feel like eventually I could take it part time or full time and just do this for a job. So there's so many people along the way that made it possible.
Well, and people could see those as, you know, sort of coincidental, you know, kind of things. But the fact is that you were there. You know what I mean? You were out there, and I think so many of that, that's kind of like saying, like, well, this company wouldn't be successful if they hadn't sold all that stuff. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, That's what they did.
Right. It's
so
true.
So that's the success, you know.
It's true. But another example of that, in 2009, my wife and I, you know, like I said, we thought, gosh, downtown Knoxville is like sparkling and shiny and done. And we moved downtown. And then when I did Pachakacha, it was 2014. So I've been doing the blog for about 4 years at that point. And so it forced me to go back through and look at what I had written about. The development, the new businesses opening, the people downtown, the personalities involved and so forth. And I was shocked to realize that 4 years after I started the blog, I was living in an entirely different city than I was 4 years earlier.
Wow.
I mean, all of our favorite things, all of the main things that we did by 2014 didn't exist in 2009 when we thought it was done. And so part of the success of what I have done, no doubt, is timing.
Sure.
I stepped in at the right moment to do this and thought Downtown was done, but Downtown was actually just prepared to start.
To really get going.
Yeah. And so that without that, you know, this probably wouldn't have worked either. So there are a lot of variables. I don't diminish what I've done, but at the same time, I have to acknowledge that there are a lot of other people that made it happen.
Well, it's timing and then mm-hmm. taking advantage of opportunity when it's presented.
Right. Yeah, if I hadn't been working my butt off when the opportunity presented itself, then it wouldn't have happened either. So that's the other side of it.
So speaking of opportunities.
I can say butt, right? PG-13, I can say butt.
Yeah, you can say butt.
Okay.
You can say, I think I already cussed.
But I could figure out a different word if I need to.
I sort of unpeeled that banana.
Okay.
So to speak already.
All right. You did that on the radio too, so I owe you.
Oh, I did do that. I did do that on the radio.
Yes, you did.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I saw people like gasp audibly. in the other booths, like, he did not say that.
I was a guest on Alan's show on, that's another thing. Yeah, every Sunday morning at 10 o'clock
right.
on WUTK, The Rock.
That's right.
90.3.
Knoxcentric, powered by InsiderKnoxville.com. Yeah, that's another part of the journey that I didn't go after. I didn't mean to do it. But I, you know, had made myself known to enough people and had worked hard enough, I guess, that it occurred to somebody else that I should do that. And so Benny Smith very generously approached me and said, hey, you want to give this a whirl? And it's been a blast. I've really enjoyed it.
Well, that's awesome. Well, speaking of opportunities, and then we'll kind of wrap things up, what is next for the Knoxville Urban Guide inside of Knoxville? Host of Knoxcentric.
You know, I can't say, I couldn't have answered that question at any point along the way. And that's the honest truth. I mean, I would love to say, well, yes, I had this master plan that if I started writing this and then I moved into that and I won this award, then I could get a radio show and I could.
Yeah.
And I'd never have had that. So I honestly can't answer that question. I just simply do what I do. And then really I've been the beneficiary of a bunch of cool things that come my way. And been willing to try them as an introvert, you know, been willing to put myself out there, expose myself, you know, to bring it back to the theme. Because, you know, I didn't know how these things would go. I didn't know how the radio show would go.
Sure.
I did some live interviews with John. You mentioned Jonathan Sexton. We did some live interviews in front of an audience. I never interviewed anybody in front of an audience before, but it was great. We had a great time and it went well. So I guess I'll just continue to be open to what comes next and keep watching those statistics and hope they tick up.
Well, let's talk to that. The Alan Sims of 2017, 25 years old. Maybe they've got a kid, who knows? But this is somebody that's, you know, wanting to do something. What is, if you could tell them one thing, you know, what is something that you would tell someone that is wanting to accomplish something with their lives?
Wow, that's so big.
I know, right?
That is really big. I think the thing that I admire in the millennials that I mentioned earlier is what I would tell them. Have the courage to fail. Just go out there and do it. But don't stop. Keep doing it. If it's worth mm-hmm. doing, keep doing it. And whether it's writing of whatever sort or art, or keep doing it, because you'll only get better. You will not get worse at what you're doing if you keep doing it. You'll only get better and persist. And don't, gosh, it's so easy for us to get distracted by the latest new and shiny and busy ourselves and think that we're going somewhere when we're really just wasting time. And I think that, you know, it's not a new concept at all. It's, you know, as old as whatever. But just the idea that if you believe in something, really keep working at it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, be honest enough to recognize when you've really given it enough and that didn't work. So what are you going to do? Are you going to adapt or are you going to do something entirely different? But don't. I mean, I see so many bloggers are the worst about it. You know, most blogs are abandoned after a few weeks because it's hard work. If you want to consistently write stuff and get it out there. And it's not always going to be perfect, you know. So it's really easy to let the self-doubt come in and say, well, I'm not doing very good at this. I'm going to work on this piece another week. Well, now your readers are gone. So you just have to get out there and you have to do the work and you have to do it every day. I almost cursed.
It's okay.
I didn't curse. That's good. Now, every single day, emphatically, imagine an emphatic curse word right there. You have to get in the trenches and just do the thing.
Just work.
And if you don't do that, then you're not going to be available when the good luck happens.
Yeah.
When the good fortune or the offer for help comes, you're not going to be prepared to accept it.
I think that's a great way to kind of go out. I think we've talked a lot about what success means, about what making art looks like, and about people being willing to help other people succeed. And I really appreciate, Alan, I appreciate you for kind of hanging out with us this afternoon. And I hope everybody else kind of takes away some important lessons. For me, number one is work.
Get at it.
You know, don't give up.
It's the old saw. If you want to be a writer, there's only one thing that keeps you from being a writer, and that's the act. Just do it.
Right.
If you're going to be a writer, all it takes is to write, photograph, draw, paint, you name it. You just have to start doing the act and do it hard and a long time and with everything you got.
Consistency is so important. So I want to thank Alan. The Knoxville Urban Guy.
It's my pleasure.
There you go. You can find all about downtown, the scene, what's up and what's next at insideofknoxville.com. You can always check him out on Facebook at
Alan Sims. Friend me at Alan Sims is fine, but we also have a Facebook page. It's just Facebook Inside of Knoxville.
Easy greasy. Mm-hmm. Well, again, thanks a lot. And this is Chris McAdoo with Best Behavior. And this is week four's podcast of 21 Days of Best Behavior. And we hope we have exposed ourselves well. Thanks to George Middlebrooks, as always, for producing. And stay tuned right here at wearebestbehavior.com as we publish more original content coming forward. New blogs, new podcasts, new guests, and new trouble being made. Thank you very much.
WeAreBestBehavior.com